My fellow Americans, I'm pleased to tell you today that I've signed legislation that will outlaw Russia forever. We begin bombing in 5 minutes.
It is essential that our team learns to work with our new recruit, not against him.
I'm a geek, walking down the street.
Check the computer.
The mainframe computer.
I access the mainframe.
At the end of this day, one shall stand, one shall fall.
Time to find out.
Welcome to Basically a Geek Show. Here are your hosts, Mike and Jack.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to episode 19 of Basically a Geek Show. That's one away from 20. Keep that in mind. Anyway, Jack, what's up?
Well, things and stuff, as usual. Got some images of the new Transformers cartoon. We've gotten one of Bumblebee before. And I know you and I had discussed our thoughts on that, and we had our Bumblebee rant.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. On one hand, it looks like we may have overreacted somewhat because...
No.
They're just being stupid, and we're fine. We're good. But the thing is, this doesn't do anything to encourage me. In fact, it makes me feel a little bit even less fond of this cartoon. I know it's a bit early out of the gate to be saying that, but there's little cues and little hints there that I don't like, and it makes me think of what they're aiming for with this.
Okay. Before let us start at the beginning. We're going to start with the article.
Yeah.
Well, first, let's go back a bit further. The name of this new show is going to be Transformers Robots in Disguise, which is a bit confusing because
right.
We already had a show called Robots in Disguise back in 2001,
yeah.
I believe. It was the one right before Armada. So I guess Hasbro figures enough time has passed that, you know, enough new kids are watching that they won't be confused because that last show is around 14, 15 years old. So,
yeah.
I guess they figure, you know, there's no harm in reusing a name. And honestly, I kind of don't blame them in that regard because, I mean, okay, let's think about this. Transformers Armada. What exactly is the name Armada referring to?
The Armada of... Many cons?
It kind of seems like they stuck a random word that they thought sounded cool to name that show. And then you got Energon and Cybertron, which followed up on it. Those titles sounded like words taken from... Like, Energon's a thing. Now, yes, in Transformers Energon, the search for Energon was nominally a plot point, but... I don't think anyone could say that show is really much about anything. After Armada, Energon, Cybertron, we have Animated, which was odd because all the shows are animated. I don't necessarily see why that one was called Animated. It was originally supposed to be called Transformers Heroes, and then it became Animated. And then afterwards was Transformers Prime... And I think it's a consensus among most fans that Optimus Prime was one of the least interesting characters in Transformers Prime. So it kind of seems like naming these series have been a bit of a problem for Hasbro since the end of Beast Machines. So in that regard, I don't mind them reusing the name Robots in Disguise and just being, you know what, you know, screw it. It's just going to be called Transformers Robots in Disguise.
Yeah, and RID, from, you know, early 2000s, I mean, maybe I'm understating its importance. I did enjoy the show, but in retrospect, it always just seemed like it was just kind of a flash in the pan.
That's exactly what it was. It was brought in to be filler.
Right.
Hasbro originally had plans to do a sequel to Beast Machines. When both the Beast Machines show and toy line underperformed, They said, we need to start from scratch. So they started to get to work on Armada. But because they were starting work on Armada kind of late in the game, they needed something to fill the time. And so they brought over the show that was called Car Robots in Japan, and they brought that over as Robots in Disguise. It was from the onset meant to just be a filler line and a filler show.
Right. Yeah. And I still have a very fond attachment to the original RID, though, because it was what got Transformers back on the right track, as far as I'm concerned, at least. I know this is subjective. I know there are people out there who will disagree. But it got Transformers back on the right track in terms of, you know, robots that are actually transforming into other machines instead of, for whatever reason, trying to be animals.
Well, there were animals in the show.
Yeah, there were.
The Predacons stuck around for reasons
right.
that were never fully explained.
Well, because they had leftover toys they wanted to use, probably.
Mm.
But it was the step in the right direction. It was the fundamental step that kind of got us where we're at today with this.
And you know what? I still have Robots in Disguise Optimus Prime packed away somewhere. That was a really cool toy.
I had Prime. I had Magnus. Actually, I think I might have just had Prime and Magnus.
You didn't get any of the Car Brothers, X-Brawn, it was X-Brawn, Sideburn, and, who was the other one? Red Alert, I think? No,
yeah.
Prowl. It was Prowl, X-Brawn, and Sideburn.
Yeah, no, I didn't. At that point, in the early 2000s, I had a lot of shit on my plate, and money was very tight. So it was one of those things where I didn't buy, you know.
So you bought the two most expensive toys.
Right. Well, I figured quality over quantity.
Gotcha. Names getting reused and, whatever. It is what it is. You might have to clarify what you mean when you say, I liked RID on the message boards. You know, we might have to go to RID1 and RID2 or something like that. But, all in all, I don't think anyone has a problem with the name when it comes right down to it. I mean, people might get, a bit, bugged.
Very few people. I mean, those of us old enough to know and those of us who actually gave a shit, and actually remember the original RID. I don't see it being an issue either. I mean, that's the least of my problems with this little enterprise.
Yeah, so let's get on to the text, and then we'll move on to the pictures. Because I think we should get the text out of the way. This is from an article on the new show. Quote, the show takes place years after Transformers Prime, when Bumblebee is summoned to save Earth from a new faction of Decepticons and assembles a rogue team of young Autobots that includes a rebel bad boy, an elite guard cadet, a bombastic Dinobot, and a hyperactive Minicon to capture their new enemies.
Well, at least they were nice enough to at least just label their cliches for us so we can keep track of them on the scorecard and check them off.
Each new bot is a fully capable action hero, but inexperienced in working together in a team, forcing Bumblebee to become both squad leader and coach, Hasbro said.
Yeah, and that last line there, that's the good part.
Because we're not
having a Bumble Miss Prime situation here.
When news of the series and the premise first leaked, we had our big Bumblebee rant about how they had finally just gone ahead and made Bumblebee leader of the Autobots and done away with all pretenses. Again, we can't say anything definitive at this point. Obviously, the show is not out. But this text here makes it seem like Bumblebee isn't the supreme Autobot commander. He's probably just the leader of the squad, which I think is infinitely preferable in terms of, you know, how they're going to treat leader Bumblebee as. Because I don't mind Bumblebee as the leader of a squad. I still kind of mind because it still means Bumblebee's front and center and they're still
right.
going to give him the lion's share of attention. And I think we've had enough Bumblebee over the past 7 years. But at the same time, the fact that he's not Autobot Supreme Leader is a plus.
It is. I mean, from a story standpoint and a lore standpoint, it is good. Like you said, though, it's kind of a pyrrhic victory because he's still the focus of the show. We're still having more fucking Bumblebee crammed down our throat. And I'm just not liking this, dude. I'm really not. I mean, here's my thing. Hear me out on this, all right? If you just look at the art style, and I know we haven't gone into the pictures yet, but if you take that into account, and specifically what they said about the whole squad leader and the small team, the blah, 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 this is animated part deux.
I can see some animated influences on the art, but I'm going to be honest, I'm not seeing it as a retread of the animated style entirely. I definitely see aspects that are animated-esque, but all in all, I'm not getting as turned off by the art style here as animated's art style did.
It's not, they're not, you know, fucking chin formers. I don't know. I'm not really digging it. I mean, I'm glad they're going back to a more cartoony art style. I am glad for that. And this isn't the abomination in terms of art style that animated was.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Maybe I'm blowing this out of proportion. Maybe I'm overreacting.
The big thing that I'm not a big fan of is Sideswipe's hair.
This is supposed to take place in the Prime continuity, so what the fuck happened to Sideswipe? And
Prime was never in Sideswipe. Prime was never in Sideswipe was never in Prime.
Oh, that was Smokescreen. That's right.
Yeah.
Duh. Second question, still valid. Since when the fuck do robots need hair?
It's a stylistic thing. I mean, in G1, we had both Scourge and Alpha Trion with, you know, facial hair.
Well, yeah, and the original Alpha Trion he had kind of like a beard plate on his chin, I guess you could say. Yeah.
I mean, the way, I'm not a big fan of the hair. I get what they're going for, but I mean, there have been enough pointy helmets and helmeted heads in Transformers that I can kind of just see this as, like, stylized in that way. Really, the head that really bugs me is Bumblebee, because it looks round. Like, he kind of looks bald.
Bumblebee's head bothers me in the sense that it's still attached to his body.
Seriously, though, I would have preferred it if they had given him some little G1 horns just to sort of give his head some more character.
That would be kind of cool, but I guess they're kind of going with the same aesthetic that he had in Prime.
Mm.
And similarly, the one that he has in the live-action movies, which is pretty characteristically round. I mean,
mm-hmm.
I don't know.
So the thing I wanted to ask you, another thing is Fix-It. Which I assume is it's the far right guy. He's got the wheels. What do you think of him?
I want to shoot him already.
Why? Why do you want to shoot him?
I see him being the next wheelie, and I mean G1 wheelie, not humping Megan Fox's leg wheelie. I see him being like a G1 wheelie, and they said hyperactive minicon.
Mm-hmm.
This is a character designed to annoy me from the get-go.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. What do you think of his character design, though? That's kind of what I'm getting at.
Ass.
I don't mind it so much because he's a minicon, and, like, minicons tended to maybe have out there robot designs.
Yeah, I get it. I mean, I'm still questioning why we even need a minicon. I don't know what they're doing with it.
I'm not sure either. I know there was that minicon assault team they sold as part of Generations, so maybe they're thinking about, like, bringing minicons back as a concept.
Seems like it. I mean, as long as they don't make it a fucking Pokemon deal, gotta catch them all. You know, as long as they don't do that, we already have something like that, and it is Pokemon.
Let's be fair, Armada made a lot of money doing that.
Oh, I know. And that's good. I mean, it helped the franchise and everything. And I'm just, those first two seasons of Armada were kind of shit because of that.
I wouldn't say shit. I'm not going to say shit. No, they weren't shit.
Well, I mean, the third season more than made up for all of it.
Now, even then, the whole Pokeformers aspect of Armada, I'd say, it was definitely tiresome, and you kind of wished, God, when are they going to do something different? But I still enjoyed it.
From a toy aspect, my big beef was that once you actually attach the Minicons to their, you know, partners, their larger scale partners, it just looked like, well, it looked like exactly what it was. One robot with a bunch of miscellaneous fucking shit stuck to it.
No, yeah, it did. It did. It did look like that. There were problems in that regard.
And if they'd found maybe a more clever way to integrate them, I don't know, maybe changing some color schemes or some design schemes, something like that, to where the integration was more natural looking once you did it. I think it would have been a lot better from a toy standpoint if they had done that. And I'm hoping that if they revisit this idea, that we see them being a little bit smarter about how they do it. I don't think they will, because they're probably going to think the kids don't care. And they don't, you know. But I would like to see it. Just kind of something frivolous on my wish list, I guess you could say.
So let's go over. We've gotten pictures of three characters. We've got pictures of Sideswipe, Bumblebee, and... fix it. Let's take a look at the roster that they gave us, that Bumblebee's leading. A Rebel Bad Boy bot that looks to be, Sideswipe.
Yeah.
An Elite Guard Cadet, a Bombastic Dinobot, and a Hyperactive Minicon. Minicons probably fix it. So, we've got an Elite Guard Cadet and a Bombastic Dinobot. Want to venture any guesses as to, who we're getting in those slots?
Maybe Bulkhead. I'm looking forward to, I don't think we're going to get any substantial name, like any big names, really.
You don't think we're going to get, Grimlock as the Dinobot?
Maybe, because they haven't really introduced the Dinobots very much in the Prime Universe.
In the comics, they're doing stuff in the comics.
Right, yeah, but not on the small screen, we haven't seen anything of them recently.
I figure Grimlock, if only because, like, I'm not... like, okay, so this is spring of 2015. This is going to be after... Age of Extinction airs, and assuming Grimlock doesn't die in Age of Extinction, they might want to keep him around for future movies, and if you have Grimlock in the cartoon in between the fourth and fifth movie, that sort of keeps him alive in the consciousness of the kids, so...
Yeah,
that's kind of my thinking, that they'll just gonna, they'll put Grimlock in there to shill, you know, the Dinobots.
That's a possibility. I mean, this one... I don't know. It's they seem definitely to be emphasizing the kid appeal on this. So throwing in robot dinosaurs, kind of hard to miss with that. So, you know, of course.
Although I find it funny that we're gonna have a robot dinosaur in a show that's title emphasizes the robots in disguise part.
Well, he is a robot. He is in disguise. He's just in disguise as a dinosaur because nothing says incognitus. Like a dinosaur.
A robotic dinosaur.
Indeed. I mean, he'll blend in, disappear. With any luck, he'll have the grail already.
Yeah. And, you know, it doesn't even have to be Grimlock. Whoever they put in that Dinobot slot, I'm not sure how they're going to handle the robots in disguise aspect of it. Like, at all. It's going to be tricky. You're getting an animated feel from it. I'm kind of curious about how it's going to work. One, I'm curious to see how much they reference the Transformers Prime timeline. Because there are a couple characters who aren't mentioned here who I'm kind of curious about. I want to see what's Ultra Magnus doing.
I think they may have him being...
Supreme Autobot Commander?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I'm also curious about Knockout.
I would love to see more Knockout. He had... If nothing else, he had personality. Mm-hmm. He was definitely one of the most interesting characters from Prime. I'd like to see more of him. If they brought him in on this one, I would, I'd be more inclined to watch it. I'm going to give it a chance regardless. I mean, fuck, I gave Animated a chance. I gave Beast Wars a chance. I mean, I give all of them a chance.
Mm-hmm.
And I will with this as well. If they have Knockout in it, it'll, you know, be definitely a check mark on the good side as far as I'm concerned.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I am pessimistic about this. I realize I'm probably jumping the gun and, you know, be overreacting a bit as I can do. Well, you're no stranger to that either.
Mm-hmm.
But in this case, it's me doing it, and I don't know. I got a bad feeling about this.
I'm excited because if Bumblebee isn't Supreme Autobot Commander, he's not Supreme Commander, then it opens up the possibility to what I talked about back when we had our Bumblebee rant, that they're just going to Invader Zim Bumblebee. Ultra Magnus is just sitting in Autobot Command on Cybertron, and he's like, "Oh, I got to get rid of this fucking guy. Like, I just got to get rid of this." Hey, Bumblebee, take that crew of idiots I put you in charge of and go to Earth.
Now, if they'd make the Minicon like Gurr, that would be awesome. Now, I would be on. I would disregard the stupidity of a Minicon and the crap of the art design if the personality was like Gurr.
Bumblebee is Zim and fix it as Gurr?
Yes. Yes. Just get rid of everybody else. Have Bumblebee be Zim. Have fix it be Gurr. And we're good.
I made it myself.
Yeah. Why is there bacon in the soap? I made it myself.
So, yeah, I'm also interested about the Decepticons. They say a new faction of Decepticons has assembled. Megatron swore off the Decepticons at the end of Prime. Shockwave and Starscream were still around, so do you see them calling the shots of this new Decepticon team?
Starscream would be a good choice, depending on how they played him.
Mm-hmm.
A bit of comic relief there. I hope they don't cheap out on us and have Megatron come back, because Megatron deserves better than to have Bumblebee as his opponent. Starscream, not so much.
Megatron would just kind of be like, it's not the same without Prime.
Mm-hmm.
It'd be like Armada all over again when Optimus Prime briefly died in that series, and then Hotshot took over the Autobots, and he was just kind of like, I don't have anyone to play with anymore.
Yeah. Lord Megatron, you still have Hotshot. You shut the fuck up!
Yeah, and obviously Megatron went through some pretty decent character growth at the end of Predacons Rising, and I think everyone would be pretty disappointed if he came back and was like, I'm evil again!
Yeah, though, I could see him doing it. I mean, I hope they don't.
I'm hoping to see Starscream's one of, if not my favorite, Transformers characters. It has been since I was a little kid watching the G2 cartoon. So, you know, if we finally got a show where Starscream properly got to be leader, if only serving as comic relief, I dig it.
Yeah, I mean, on one hand, I have mixed feelings. On one hand, I would like to see Starscream get a shot to lead something. On the other, it's kind of like, yeah, but against Bumblebee? But I guess that does make the odds more even.
Transformers, bottom of the barrel.
That's kind of what I feel like with this. I mean...
I don't know. We did get that ghostly image of Prime, so it's going to be interesting to see, you know, is Optimus Prime going to be his Obi-Wan Kenobi, where he appears in, like, Jedi ghost form to be like, you must go to the Dagobah system, Bumblebee.
I'm telling you, Bumblebee curled up in a corner, crying, singing Let It Be over and over and over again.
I'm curious mostly to see how the Transformers Prime universe shakes out. I want to see what happens with Magnus. I want to see what happens with Knockout. I want to see what happens to Starscream, and I want to see what's who's running this new Decepticon faction. That's pretty much what's pushing me to see this. I'm definitely not happy about Bumblebee as the in-show leader, but I can deal with it if I know he's not the supreme leader of the Autobots. It makes it better. It makes it more palatable. I have to admit, while this news item didn't do much to make me think the show was going to be fantastic, it did do a bit to make me go, maybe it won't be that bad, and make me a bit more positive about the prospect of giving it a chance.
Yeah, and there is one good thing. I'm trying my best to be positive here. There is one good thing, and that since they're using basically bottom-of-the-barrel characters here, at least as far as I'm concerned, I know there are people who give a shit about Bumblebee, whatever.
What about Sideswipe?
He's just always been kind of there.
Okay.
basically, I mean, they're using characters that I really don't give a shit about.
Mm-hmm.
So if they do something stupid, you know, in terms of reinventing the characters and whatnot, I'm not going to be pissed. I'm not going to care.
Well, it seems they might be doing that at least with Sideswipe because, now again, there's nothing really absolutely confirming this, but if I had to guess, I'm going to guess that Sideswipe here is the Rebel Bad Boy bot. And, I guess that's a reinvention of Sideswipe's character. I honestly couldn't tell you what Sideswipe's character was beforehand, but, Sideswipe, as that, you know, Bat Rebel Bad Boy bot, I'm getting flashbacks to Beast Machine's Night Scream. I know you didn't see that show, but I did, and I actually rewatched it relatively recently. And that hair, combined with that description, just makes me think Night Scream. And if he's just going to be this emo, angsty, you know, screw you guys kind of character, I'm gonna want to kill him more than Fix-It. Fix-It could be the new Wheelie, and you know what? I'd gladly keep Fix-It alive, if only so I could fling his body at Sideswipe. At emo, rebel, bad boy Sideswipe.
You, annoying one, prepare to be weaponized! Toss him in Sideswipe.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, whenever they try to write a bad boy rebel character in a kid's show, the results can be painful. So, yeah, that's the main one I'm a bit worried about. The Elite Guard Cadet, whoever that ends up being, and the Dinobot, whoever that ends up being, and even Fix-It, whatever, he'll do what he does. But, yeah, Sideswipe's the one I'm worried about, honestly. The one I'm really worried about annoying me.
Yeah, I mean, if they end up making him annoying, whatever. I'm already set up for a lot of annoying on this. I mean, you got Bumblebee. You got Fix-It. If it makes Sideswipe annoying, too, well, that would just be pretty much staying consistent. But, yeah, I get your point. We don't need emo bots.
It's just that hair, man. That hair. It's worrying me. Not just because it's an aesthetic thing, but because I kind of see where that's going in terms of characterization, and I'm not happy.
Sideswipe, why are you scratching your paint off? So I know I can still feel.
Alrighty, so. Let's move on to some decent, Transformers fiction. IDW Transformers Comics, which we've praised multiple times on this show, have been nominated for the, first annual True Believer Awards.
Now,
the True Believers Awards are being organized by Mike and Cassandra Conroy, It's a father-daughter team who ran the previous Eagle Awards, and the True Believer Awards are their attempt to create, quote, a relevant award show for the 21st century. And so this is their first crack at it. And James Roberts, the writer for IDW's More Than Meets the Eye series, a fantastic series, has been nominated for favorite comic book writer. More Than Meets the Eye number 13 has been nominated for favorite single issue comic book. And the More Than Meets the Eye Remain in the Light series has been nominated for favorite ongoing series. And Chris Riel, the More Than Meets the Eye editor, the IDW editor, has been nominated for favorite editor, and IDW has been nominated for favorite publisher. So IDW getting a lot of love, mostly on the back of James Roberts, Chris Riel, and More Than Meets the Eye. And as someone who has thoroughly enjoyed the More Than Meets the Eye series, not just as a Transformers fan, but as a comic book fan, I say it's fantastic to see. It's just absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, it's. I'm always happy to see, you know, IDW get some recognition for their work with Transformers, and this is definitely no exception. Hasbro, notice this. Have them come right for you. At least consult. At least consult, for fuck's sake.
Yeah, the IDW... to be fair, a lot of what they... it seems as if Hasbro kind of lets IDW do their own thing. Like, we mentioned on the show a few weeks back that in the IDW comics, Megatron was becoming an Autobot. And the IDW guys kind of released a story where they kind of explained how that happened. And they said that they were meeting with Hasbro reps and they were going over their plans. And this was sort of a meeting for Hasbro to give them the okay, because it's Hasbro's intellectual property. So obviously anything they do needs Hasbro's blessing. And they were kind of explaining where they wanted to go. And when they got to Megatron Autobot, the Autobot, Hasbro was like, sure, do it. So my thinking is that maybe they let IDW kind of do their own thing, but if they were to come under the Hasbro umbrella, then you'd get, like, the lawyers involved and, like, we have to protect the brand's image and wouldn't let them do, you know, as nearly as many things as they're doing in the comic books.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. I just still kind of hold out this desire to see some of these comic books translated faithfully into, you know, small screen interpretations.
We've seen influences. Ultra Magnus and Prime is very much based off of Ultra Magnus from the More Than Meets the Eye series. I still think there are some things that they let them do in More Than Meets the Eye that they wouldn't let them do elsewhere. So I'm not sure if it's as easy as just saying, like, let James Roberts write a cartoon. But regardless, it's still nice to see that team get the recognition they deserve. And it's really cool to see, because I took a look at the nominations. It's in the link to the story on TFW 2005. You can go to the True Believer Awards website, and they have all the categories there. Point being that it's just really cool to see a well-written Transformers series be mentioned in the same breath as, say, a Batman series or an Avengers series. Like, you know, these are series that have long-standing histories in the comic book world that routinely get award nominations, and to see Transformers get mentioned in the same breath is really cool to see, especially because I know the brand deserves it. The IDW series, More Than Meets the Eye in particular, has been fantastic. And it's just really nice to see them finally get that recognition.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, Transformers has deserved something like this for a long time. I mean, it's nice to see that you know, under IDW stewardship, they're getting the recognition they deserve, and they're being taken in a good direction And it really helps us all out because, like you said, there is, I mean, even if you've never read these comic books, you're still benefiting from this.
Mm-hmm.
Because there have been, things taken from the IDW, comics and put in here and there.
Ultra Magnus, in Prime being a big one. And then, I haven't read it. I haven't read this other comic series yet, but from what I gather, Rewind and Chrome Dome, their relationship as established in More Than Meets the Eye is being more or less – has more or less inspired them in a similar relationship in the Transformers Collectors Club official ongoing comic series. So we're seeing stuff that More Than Meets the Eye has sort of – made popular, that it's made interesting, and we're seeing it spread throughout the fandom, throughout the franchise and the media involved in various other parts. So, yeah, Jack's right. Even if you don't read More Than Meets the Eye, you're probably going to benefit from it somehow because it is really good Transformers fiction, and the writers of other series are going to take that into account, and it's going to influence how they write.
Exactly. So, you know, that's a good thing. When it comes to, a franchise like this, one aspect of it being good can help make up for one aspect of it sucking. With this new, this Robots in Disguise cartoon, I mean, they could end up taking a couple of storylines even from an IDW comic book, and it could end up changing the overall feel and the fate of the series. I mean, it's a little bit here and there intermingling can help everything.
Mm-hmm. Indeed. Indeed. So, congratulations, IDW. Congratulations, Chris Ryle. Congratulations, James Roberts, especially. You guys deserve it. And, looking forward to, more seasons of the ongoing More Than Meets the Eye book, most definitely. Let's keep on moving. We've got the a new Age of Extinction TV spot.
Yes, yes, we do. Lockdown. He's doing the talkerson thing. That's a thing.
Indeed. We've known Lockdown was going to be the main villain. We knew he was going to be a villain. His main villain status was more or less confirmed when we learned that Galvatron would be a human-controlled transformer, human-made, human-controlled transformer. So it seems as if Lockdown is going to be the big bad for the movie, and we finally heard him talk. Your thoughts? What did you think of Lockdown's voice?
You know, it's understandable at least. So, you know, that's cool.
Was that ever really a problem in Transformers, though?
Sometimes it could be. For me, at least. Sometimes it could be. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it works. You know, it seems kind of out of character for Lockdown, though.
How so?
Well, he's basically just a rogue mercenary, right?
Yes.
I mean, so, I don't know. The whole thing of even him being a... like a main villain or having that much capability to just basically level the planet, that seems a bit stretching it. I don't know. They might be doing something different with him.
Yeah, they might give him a different backstory, or they might give flash out why he's there, what he's doing, what he's doing. Well, I kind of liked it. His voice, voiced by Mark Ryan, by the way. It seemed very calm, very, deliberate. And I liked that because I'm a fan of Hugo Weaving's Megatron, but even Hugo Weaving's Megatron was a bit, wah-ha-ha-ha-ha. And it kind of seems like this, Lockdown is more conniving, for lack of a better term, very calm. So that's interesting to see. I look forward to seeing how that plays out.
Yeah, and it looks like it'll be interesting. I mean, how the voice sounds, I mean, the voice sounds fine. Sounds a bit more, when I hear the voice, when I hear that voice, I think more Bond villain than, mercenary guy.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense?
It does, yes.
Maybe it's because it's a British accent. And we all know that, you know, all British people are way smarter than us. So, when you hear a British accent, you automatically usually think smart. So, and when you think smart, you think Bond villain. I don't know. But that's where I'm going with it. That's my train of thought, however muddled and silly it is. You know, we'll see. Yeah, I'm not attached to Lockdown one way or the other as a character because, well, he was animated. And, so I really don't care what they do with the character, to be honest with you.
Mm-hmm. Indeed. I don't know. I'm excited to see if there – because, okay, this is a character who has a gun coming out of his face. And if they can somehow make that character the deliberate, you know, conniving chess master type – if you can do that to someone with a gun on his face, then bravo, Mr. Bay, bravo. So,
I would love to have been there when Michael Bay was just pitching that idea, and his face, it turns into a fucking gun! He's got a fucking gun for a face!
Yeah, I mean, we know that is not a trait that Lockdown has in any other continuity he's shown up in. So, yeah. That was a Michael Bay original idea. He saw this guy and said, you know what he needs? A gun for a face! And it shoots other guns.
Yeah. and then the little guns, they shoot Cybertronian bees!
Oh, yeah.
And then we need the cameo from Nicolas Cage. But anyways.
The bees! Yeah. So, I'm interested. I admit when I saw the clip, I was curious to see, you know, what he'd sound like. And it wasn't what I was expecting, but I think that's in a good way. And I'm curious to see what happens.
I really didn't have any expectations one way or the other. It's like, it's Lockdown. He's the bad guy. He does the stuff and the things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it is what it is. It's serviceable. I'm sure it'll probably work for the movie. So, you know, I don't have any unfavorable opinion of it.
All right. Moving on to some less than, stellar movie news. This is a few weeks old. We did not get to it when we wanted to, but nonetheless, we are here to deliver you the news you deserve. The Age of Extinction toy line. Not doing so hot.
Yeah. Ass!
Yes, as some of you might have remembered from our Toy Fair coverage, Jack is particularly not a fan of the Age of Extinction toy line. And according to a New York Post article, Transformers Age of Extinction sales and shelf space are down 50% to what Dark of the Moon was doing.
Yeah. And, I mean, that's because these toys are just god-awful.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, okay, I was in Walmart this week, and I picked up Generations Armada Starscream. And I was looking at their – I was actually going to get Leader Prime if they'd had him. Mm-hmm. And they didn't. But they had – the shelves were pretty much choked with, you know, the one-pump chumps.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, both the big and the small varieties of those. They really didn't have much that wasn't that or fucking Constructobots. Everything else, all of the quote-unquote good figures had been taken.
Oh, it's funny because no one's buying Constructobots.
Yeah, I mean, they're not.
So, I guess, really, what I'm asking is it just because that the toy line is subpar, in your opinion? Because, according to that same New York Post article, it seems that this is something that's affecting more than just Transformers. Amazing Spider-Man 2, Captain America the Winter Soldier both had toy lines. And both those toy lines are down compared to the toy lines for Amazing Spider-Man 1 and Captain America the First Avenger. So the article seems to be getting at the idea that movie toys are kind of in a downward slope in general. And I'm curious as to your thoughts on that.
Well, it's because honestly, I mean, the movie toys, they just don't seem to have the same give a shits put into them this go around as they did with, you know, the previous iterations. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's a design philosophy issue that change that they've had. I don't know.
Well, the reason I bring that up is because my theory is that if you look at all of those movies, what do they all have in common? What did Captain America, Winter Soldier, Amazing Spider-Man 2, and Transformers Age of Extinction all have in common? They're all sequels.
Right.
And, I mean, that's the thing. Let's divorce ourselves from Transformers for a second and just go to, say, Captain America. If a kid bought a Captain America toy during Captain America 1, the first Avenger, why is he going to be spurred on to buy the new Captain America toy? He's already got a Captain America toy. Now, yeah, kids always want what's new, but, you know, the kid's usually not the one making the purchasing decisions. It's the parents. And if you're a parent and your kid's like, I want the new Captain America toy. Well, what the hell's wrong with the one we got you when the last movie came out? I mean, it's still good. It's still Captain America. And his costume really hasn't changed all that much yet. He's got the Winter Soldier outfit in this new movie. But, you know, it's still blue. It's still got the shield. It's still got the star. And still got a allusion to striping patterns. To a parent who is maybe not all that discerning, you know, it's all just Captain America. Why buy a new Captain America toy for your kid when Captain America's already... You've already done it when the last movie came out. There's nothing... It's not new enough. It's not different enough to really convince you as a parent that you need to buy this for your kid, like you did the first time. And the same thing with Spider-Man, obviously. And, you know, there's a bit of a difference with Age of Extinction, because of Age of Extinction, they redesigned the Transformers who are reappearing. Optimus Prime and Bumblebee are both getting new robot modes, new vehicle modes. But at the same time, it kind of goes back to that Winter Soldier outfit. They're different, yes, but are they different enough to convince parents to buy their kids a new toy? If a parent bought their child Leader Class Optimus Prime from, say, the last Leader Class Optimus Prime that was released from, say, the Hunt for the Decepticons line, which wasn't a movie line, but it was a movie line. It was tied into the movie line. Then why are you going to then buy him a Leader Class Optimus Prime from Age of Extinction? Yeah, it's a different robot mode, but to parents who are perhaps not as discerning, it's he's still red, white, and blue, same color scheme, same general alt mode. He's still a truck. He still has flames. It's still the same toy in a lot of people's minds.
Right.
So, I mean, Star Wars kind of changed the rules forever when it came to movie merchandising. After Star Wars, every action movie had to have a toy line. I think we've gotten to the point where that model is showing its strains, where, you know, especially in the current economy, parents and even collectors are going to be less inclined to buy new toys of characters that, if they're not the same as the last versions, are pretty darn close.
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm thinking too. I mean, there's nothing really here. If you already have toys from the previous three movies, mm-hmm. and, you know, is there anything here really compelling you to go out and get them? I mean, Prime's new alt mode, albeit still a truck, is different enough to where, you know, honestly, if they had packaged him in alt mode, mm-hmm. that might have been a good idea on their part.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's the most notable difference.
Mm-hmm.
It's the most distinctive difference. So if they had done that, that might have helped a little bit, because it'd make it easier to see and to demonstrate, hey, it's different, guys, buy it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, get kids, you know, a little more worked up for it. I don't see much here, though, really, besides the characters that are unique to this movie, perhaps, that, you know, haven't been in any of the previous movies. There's not much compelling you to go and get them. And then, you know, from the adult collector standpoint, there's just the quality of the toys in general and their overall engineering and, you know, the whole shell former thing going on.
I mean, let's discuss, from the adult collector's perspective, and let's discuss the first wave generations. I'm only going to talk about generations because we've ragged on the one step and the simpler transformations. We've ragged on that enough. I want to talk about the generations toy line because the generations wing of Age of Extinction, those are the toys that are made with collectors in mind. And I want to look at this first wave of deluxes. First wave of deluxe for Age of Extinction Generations. Bumblebee. Crosshairs or cross, I think it's crosshair or crosscut, crosshairs, I think.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah.
He's the green Autobot car. He comes with dual pistols. And, we've got Slug. And we've got Scorn. Now, Bumblebee already right off the bat, people have Bumblebee fatigue. And yeah, he's a classic Camaro this time, and it's a pretty nice looking alt mode. And you might get a few people who are interested in just the alt mode. But by and large, the collector community in general is just burnt out on Bumblebee. And you're not, so trying to get them in a large enough numbers to buy another deluxe Bumblebee movie toy, it's not happening. So then let's look at the other four. Crosscut, I've heard some good things about, but the way that they've packaged him makes him look terrible. So if you're an adult collector who's maybe a bit fatigued from the movie aesthetic, like a lot of adult collectors are, and you just see Crosscut, and you're on the fence, and you see Crosscut in person, and he's in the package, and he looks terrible because they packaged him half-transformed, then you're gonna go, eh, you know what, pass. So that only leaves Slug and Scorn, the two first wave Dinobots. And if that's the sort of thing that you're interested in, I picked up both of those because I'm interested in the whole Knight aesthetic of the new Dinobots. But one, I know that Knight aesthetic might not work for everyone, and two, even best case scenario, and people are buying them, then you're really only batting 50% on that first wave of deluxes.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's very iffy. And then you get to the Voyagers, and you've got Prime and Grimlock, Evasion Prime and Grimlock in the first wave. Evasion Prime and Grimlock, I've both heard, are decent toys. But the thing I've heard with both is that people seem surprised that they're decent when they get them. So there's not a lot of good word of mouth, and it kind of seems like less people are buying these than they perhaps normally would. And then you have the leaders, and even if we assume the best case scenario for leaders, leader toys generally move slower anyway because they're bigger and they're more expensive, so they're not going to move as fast. You always kind of have to take a hit on those.
Yeah.
So the generation's wing of Age of Extinction just seem, I think it's a combination of movie fatigue, and I think it's a combination of perhaps maybe poor character choice for the first wave of deluxes, maybe hold off on Bumblebee for a wave or two, but I don't know. I don't know, man. I've got a story myself. I was out, looking at these figures in the store, and, well, they did not. I mean, they were already on sale, and movies not out yet.
So. Yeah, yeah, that's pretty bad. Like your flagship toys for your new movie on sale.
No, the movie's not even out yet.
Right? Yeah, yeah. Movie's not even out yet, and your flagship toy is on sale.
Movie's not even out yet. Toys are on sale.
Yeah, that's pretty telling and kind of sad. Now, and it was a pretty substantial sale too, wasn't it?
Well, it's funny, with the sale I ended up paying full price American. In Canada, I got Leader Class Prime. Leader Class toys in Canada usually run around $60. This sale, I got them for $45. So, yeah, $15 off, not bad. But $45 is full retail in the United States, so, you know.
Yeah.
But, you know, for $45, I was happy with them. Again, this kind of goes back to quality. For $45, I was happy with Leader Prime.
Yeah, he's not worth 60.
If I had paid 60, I would have felt a bit ripped off, yeah.
I mean, especially given the parity of the American dollar to the Canadian dollar. Mm-hmm. I mean, you technically paid what you should have for it to begin with.
Pretty much,
you know, it's kind of like the whole thing with the gas. You know, gas goes up and oil goes up, but never goes back down.
Mm-hmm.
You know, kind of that thing. They're kind of screwing you guys on that shit. It was a targeted sale too. Now, keep in mind, guys, he didn't get this on the day where they were just like everything off. You know, everything X percent off.
Yeah, no, this was whatever. This was a Transformers wide sale, and it was a shelf completely dedicated to movie stuff. So this wasn't even applying to maybe some unsold Beast Hunters or maybe some unsold Generations. No, this was the shelf. This was the shelf they had reserved for new movie stuff, and it was already marked down. And honestly, it's why it was marked down that I decided to go with it, because it kind of caught me by surprise. I wasn't expecting to see a sale before the movie even comes out. The sale usually comes out maybe a couple weeks after the movie's already been released, and you already have that initial wave, and then they just kind of have to clear everything else out. But no.
Right.
No. Movie's not even out. And they're already trying to move some of the stuff as fast as they can. So, I think it's a problem on the business end of things. It's not obvious. We have our qualms about the quality of the toy line, but I think bigger picture, it's a business problem. The business model of having a huge toy line for every action movie that comes out, I think is starting to show its strain, because it's not just Transformers. Captain America and Spider-Man are having to deal with it too. I think both toy companies and I think retailers have to adjust to that new way of thinking that a new movie doesn't necessarily mean you need a huge toy rollout, because kids and parents and even collectors now are starting to get to the point where they don't feel the need to buy every variation. You don't need a new Captain America or Spider-Man toy when the figure you got from the last movie works just as well. There's not enough of a change. There's not enough of an improvement or change to warrant this new figure, to warrant spending money on a new figure.
Yeah, and it's one of those things where it's like, okay, we get it. You have 20 different versions of Optimus Prime. That's all well and good, because it gives the collector variety and lets us pick and choose which ones we want, which ones we think are better, mm-hmm. and build our collections accordingly. But they need to realize this whole thing. I won't say it's impossible to collect all of them.
Mm-hmm.
It's highly bloody unlikely. And that desire there just isn't there anymore. Because for most of us, I mean, even if we have the disposable income
mm-hmm.
to do this, to attempt it, most of us only have so much fucking space in our houses.
Yes.
You know, and when you know, the Great Wall of Bumblebee, there's like 20,000 goddamn variations of Bumblebee.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're a big Bumblebee fan, you could probably fill a bedroom with nothing but Bumblebee.
I'm convinced that even the hardcore Bumblebee fans, if they're out there, are you know, at this point saying, you know what, enough's enough. You can only make a yellow and black Camaro so many different ways before they all just sort of blend in. Which is kind of what happened near the end of Dark of the Moon, where they kept releasing all these minor color variations of Bumblebee, and I couldn't even tell you how many Bumblebees came out in Dark of the Moon, because they all just sort of blended together. And, in my mind, it's just a blob of bumblebees that happened for a period of time.
Yeah. And Optimus Prime, unfortunately, is getting to be the same way. And, you know, there's a lot of pretty cool variations of Optimus Prime. You and I are in absolute agreement. The Classics Prime is best Prime.
Yeah. The Japanese Deco specifically.
Which is getting a re-release. Thanks to this movie, so that's good.
Yeah, the Evolutions 2-pack with a repainted Evasion Optimus Prime will be packaged with the Generations No, I mean the classics Optimus Prime. And that toy came out in 2006. It has been 8 years, and I don't think that there has been a better Optimus Prime toy since.
Yeah.
Of any continuity or style or toy line, nothing. Nothing has touched that toy, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's a spectacular toy, and I'm glad it's getting a re-release. I thought the timing of, okay, so here's the timing of it, guys. This is kind of funny. So a few weeks ago, Mike calls me, he's like, hey dude, you know, I was at a toy convention, found a Classics Hinkay Prime, pretty cheap, so I snagged it for you. And, I'll put it in the mail here in a couple days. I'm like, awesome, you know? And I'm fucking stoked and all this shit. I get it, and by God, it's everything Mike said it would be. I know some people said it's a bit kibbly with the arms and shit, but, you know, nothing's perfect. And this is a outstanding figure, that be damned. And, like, 2 days later, or not even, I think, like, the next day,
mm-hmm.
we see on DFW, Classics Prime re-release, and Mike's like, don't!
Yeah. That was postage I didn't have to pay for.
Yeah.
But, yeah, no, in Warcraft, circles, well, just us, we call it the Law of the Shoulders.
Yes. Yeah, as soon as you, basically the Law of the Shoulders is, and this goes to World of Warcraft, if there's a piece of gear that you're really wanting badly, and you finally find something that's different or that serves the same purpose or is better, whatever, that next raid, once you get that piece of equipment to substitute it, what you'd originally wanted will drop.
Yeah, exactly. As soon as you get as soon as something better appears, the thing that you've spent months trying to farm will finally, you know, fall your way. So that's just the way these things happen. But, you know, that is good. And it is kind of telling that every major Age of Extinction purchase from this point outward that I want to get is a two-pack of some sort involving an older toy. I want to get the G1 redeco of Fall of Cybertron Grimlock that they're selling with a Deluxe Prime as part of an Age of Extinction two-pack. And again, that's a Generations Grimlock. I want to, and of course, I really like that Classics Prime mold, and I'm not averse to buying it again, so I'm gonna get that two-pack with Evasion Optimus Prime. And so, that's the thing. The big thing that's selling me on a lot of Dark of the Moon toys right now are other toys that Dark of the Moon figures are just so happen to be packaged with.
Yeah.
Ideally, I'd be like, can I pay half price and only get half of this?
Yeah. I do want to get it though, because I'd like to have the evasion mode prime with the faceplate.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
I Classics Prime is such an awesome figure. I don't mind having another one.
Yeah. The evasion mode prime I've actually heard is a great figure if you're willing to give it a chance. I'm just not sold on the faceplateless head that the initial release came with. So I'm just gonna wait until I see a version that I like. But it is telling that supposedly this great evasion mode toy, everyone who says it's great says, and I was surprised. So it's not getting a lot of good word of mouth, and apparently people just aren't buying it, even though it's pretty decent by all accounts. I mean, that just seems to be the problem with this toy line. Most of the figures objectively aren't that great, and the good ones, nobody knows that they're good.
Yeah.
I mean, the Dinobots being an exception, I've heard Scorn and Slug. People seem to be falling over head over heels over those two figures, but, you know, that's only two figures in a multi-figure, multi-wave toy line, so, you know, your mileage may vary on that one. And I can't wait until I see that Age of Extinction Galvatron Voyager figure on shelves so I can take joy in passing on it. I hate that thing. And its stupid tent truck.
Yeah, fuck that thing. I mean, God damn it. I would have to say it is the worst Transformers toy easily in 10 years. As far as I'm concerned.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, maybe the one pump chumps, not including those, cause they're in the thing all their own, and that's not really fair. just basing on things that are actually meant to be real Transformers. Mm-hmm. It's just ass.
I'd say Prime Robots in Disguise, Black Arachnia was pretty terrible. But this
that was over 10 years ago.
No, it wasn't.
Really?
No, I'm talking about Prime Robots in Disguise from the Prime toy line. Arachnia, Black Rex, sorry, I got them confused.
I'm sorry, I heard Robots in Disguise and I was thinking, based on our conversation earlier, never mind me.
Yeah.
Guys, I'm having an off night in case you can't tell.
Arachnid from the Prime toy line was pretty terrible. I'm not sure if Galvatron is quite that bad, because at least Galvatron has functioning limbs, by all accounts. I mean, that's how bad that Arachnid toy was. But yeah, that Galvatron still pisses me off. Shell formering is one thing, but this really takes a lot of liberties of any goodwill I might be willing to extend to shell formers, and just, you know, it takes advantage of that goodwill. And I do not appreciate it. I feel used. I feel cheap. And I will pass on Galvatron, and damn, will it feel good to actually do that. Woo.
Yeah, thanks for saving us money, Hasbro. I mean, and that's where this is at. You know, like you said, the whole collection standpoint of this has gotten to the point where we can, because there is such diversity in the lines, if Hasbro releases something that's a pile of ass, well, congrats. We just saved $35.
Indeed. Indeed.
You know?
Let's shift gears. Pardon the pun. Robots. Anyway.
Lol.
Let's shift gears to E3.
Yes, E3. Gamer Christmas, basically.
Mm-hmm. In June.
Yeah, in June. Christmas in June for gamers, more or less, where the big three, Microsoft, Sony, and Nintendo, show off their wares, and of course, you know, other developers and things show things they've been working on as well. It's very inclusive in that regard. I'm going to go over this in broad strokes, because the Nintendo and the Sony and the Microsoft presentations were, by and large, with a few exceptions, everything you would expect them to be: uninspiring and crammed with movie-esque trailers for games using pre-rendered footage.
Now, for those who might not be in the know, explain to us what pre-rendered footage is.
Basically, if you've got a game that you're showing, you know, there's usually like the cinematic scenes, and Final Fantasy X is a good example. Like the cinematics where everything looked really good, you know, the awesome CGI and all this other shit.
Mm-hmm.
That's all pre-rendered. It doesn't use the capacity of the actual game itself to display things.
Okay.
It's not in-game footage. It's pre-rendered. It's something that they did, just like a Pixar movie or something like that they used to make a little mini movie for the game.
Okay.
And that's what this is.
Okay.
And that's, you know, that's been pretty much the standard for gaming trailers now for the last 4 or 5 years. And, you know, first it was awesome and cool, and now it's just like, you know, show me the game. Because it's gotten to the point where they use that to mask shitty gameplay.
That you can't actually tell what the game's going to be like based on
right.
This pre-rendered footage.
Right, exactly. And everyone gets all hyped and excited, and you know, they start beating their meat over a game that they don't even know if it's going to be good or not. And we've had that a lot, you know.
Sir, Iron Man 3 killed my ability to ever trust a trailer again, so I think I'm immune from this.
Right, exactly. And so am I, you know. And I watched Sony and Microsoft's presentations at E3, and I'm sitting there, I'm thinking, you know, this is great, guys, but can you show some actual fucking gameplay?
So so both Microsoft and Sony were guilty of this, large?
Yeah. You know, and it was everything pretty much standard that you would expect. New Call of Duty, new Battlefield. Now, I'm not going to say that there were no good offerings from either one of them.
Mm-hmm.
Granted, I did pay more attention to Sony because I prefer Sony over Microsoft.
And nobody's buying the X-Bone.
Yeah, the X-Bone is, I mean, it's not a failed system by any means, but it's definitely getting its ass handed to it by the PS4.
And everything that Microsoft has been doing kind of just seems like, Okay, will you buy it now? Come on, guys. We're sorry. It just seems really desperate on their end.
Yeah, it is. I mean, because, you know, they've done a 180 on everything, pretty much. Now they're selling the Xbox without the Kinect. So, great. Now Bill Gates no longer gets to watch us masturbate. I'm sure he's very sad about that. So, you know, it's... your Xbox won't be all like, hello, Dave. Can't you just be a gaming system? Sorry, Dave. I'm afraid I can't do that.
What's that, Dave? You wanted to borrow a game?
Yeah. but yeah, and so Microsoft, I'll give them credit. They're admitting their mistakes fairly rapidly, and they're trying very quickly and efficiently to right the ship. Mm-hmm. So I'll give them credit where it's due. Mm-hmm. Sony is actually taking the route Microsoft took a little bit, except they're doing it more intelligently. They're introducing PlayStation TV. They're introducing peripherals and other things that are optional mm-hmm. that you can buy to give your PS4 these capabilities.
Which is how it always should have been. These things should have been gaming systems first and multimedia platforms later. And it seems like Sony understands that. Like you said, you buy the PS4 and it's a gaming system. And if you want, you can get Sony TV. Whereas Microsoft was like, they front-loaded everything and it came with all these restrictions and all these conditions to the point where you said, you know, this isn't even a gaming system anymore.
Yeah. But, you know, in terms of what they offered – mm-hmm. At E3, you know, there were a couple good titles. I forget what the name of the one for PS4 was that I thought looked pretty cool. It was something involving dragons. can't go wrong with that, right?
No, you can't. You know, just throw a dragon in there and be like, hey, you have to kill this. You're like, okay.
Right, exactly. But it again was a pre-rendered, you know, trailer, so results may vary. I'm going to keep an eye on it, though. Mm-hmm. I think it was something like Scale Wrath or some shit like that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Nintendo, though, getting to Nintendo, because they're really the ones that I came away very impressed with.
So if I asked you the cliched question, who won E3?
Nintendo.
Okay.
I know this is subjective, and, you know, I know a lot of people may disagree with me, and, you know, such as you're right. I think Nintendo won. Mm-hmm. And now, granted, I am a little bit biased. I like Sony, but I've had a long-standing relationship with Nintendo. 20 years, you know, 25 years. So, yeah, there is a little bit of bias there. Though I'm one of the first to call them out on their mistakes when they fuck something up, too.
Well... But, you know, if we're going to go by sales figures, I mean, the X-Bone's getting its ass kicked, but the Wii U is, the Wii
a
U.
A long shot. But it's making a comeback.
Is it?
Yeah, and that's not just me, you know, the South will rise again kind of thing. It actually is making a comeback. And because Nintendo is announcing the games now that they should have had it launch or closer to it.
No, exactly. Like, I've seen you say this, I've seen others say this, that Nintendo won E3, and I say, and my takeaway from it is, yeah, they won E3, but they won E3 by announcing a bunch of games they should have announced a year ago.
Right. I mean, we just got Mario Kart 8. We're getting Smash Brothers here later on.
This year. A new Zelda game.
Two new Zelda games. Hyrule Warriors, which is being done by Koei. It's basically Zelda done up with Dynasty Warriors.
Okay.
Hack and slash gameplay is what it is. With some strategic elements as well because Koei kind of got their start as a niche developer doing strategy games. Some mm-hmm. of my favorites, but I won't go into that. So Hyrule Warriors looks awesome. I do plan on buying it. I can't wait to get it. I think it looks fucking awesome.
A new Star Fox game.
A new Star Fox game. They were pretty cheeky about that, actually. At the very end of the press conference, they show Miyamoto, back there. And Miyamoto, he's the guy that made Mario and Donkey Kong, and he's basically the god of Nintendo.
He made them a lot of money.
Yeah, exactly. He is the father of modern gaming in many respects. I mean, Microsoft, Sony, they wouldn't be here without Miyamoto. So, you know, he's working on this new Star Fox game, and it's funny, at the end of the press conference, they show him, and he's sitting there, and he's playing it, except they've got the screen blurred, and you really can't see what it is.
Mm-hmm.
But you can. you can and you can't at the same time. You know how it is when they do a shit job.
Yeah.
All these fucking true crime shows hiding someone's identity. Mm-hmm. It was kind of one of those kind of a deals.
And it wasn't quite as bad where you just start hearing like, do a barrel roll.
Yeah, that would have been awesome.
They can't guess what game this is. I guess I should thank you, Star Fox. Pay no attention to that dialogue.
Yeah. You heard nothing. And they actually did that as like a stealth announcement of the game.
Mm-hmm.
But the, you know, Miyamoto turns around in his chair and you can see the screen in the background as he talks. And he's basically saying, I'm working on new ways to use the Wii controller.
Mm-hmm.
And you see the game in the background. You're not even really paying attention to what the fuck he's saying. Because,
mm-hmm.
Well, for one thing, it's subtitles. I'm like, can't be arsed to read Star Fox in background. I see what you did there, guy. And, you know, they did formally announce it later, though, or basically acknowledge it. Yes, we are doing a Star Fox. They're aiming to have it out next year. Now, what they had at E3, it was not playable by anyone. It was seen by other people. I haven't found any ungarbled footage of it.
Mm-hmm.
But at this point, it's more like, you know, just a very base, hardly even a demo. It's like, you know, this is what we want to do with it. And it's a few minutes of, you know, supposedly playable gameplay just to kind of outline the basics of where they're going with it. Mm-hmm. They're going to have ground vehicles in it as well.
Well, they had that going back to Star Fox 64.
Yeah. They're doing it different with the targeting, where the Wii U controller will be used to target independently of the direction in which you're flying. So just basically imagine it as a spaceship with a turret.
My favorite announcement was that there's going to be co-op, and that two players can jointly control a single fighter. And this will be done by one person piloting and the other person targeting, which could either be really awesome or it could go horribly wrong.
Yeah, and that's pretty much what everyone said about it. This will either be awesome and innovative and, you know, all that good shit, or it'll just be ass. And the thing is with Nintendo, it's always buy your ticket, take your fucking ride.
Mm.
Nintendo did do something that I don't like.
Mm.
Well, I don't know. I'm not sure how to think about it.
Okay.
So, Skylanders, right?
Yes.
You know, where you have the little figures you buy and they unlock shit in the game. Well, Nintendo's getting in on that shit too. And yeah, Disney's doing it as well, but I don't care about them. Nintendo's doing it. They're calling it Amiibo.
That sounds terrible.
With the Mii part, of course, being spelled with double I's. And I'm just going to call it Amiiba.
I don't, it sounds awkward. It sounds kind of stupid. Honestly, like, I don't know. It sounds like Nintendo's forcing themselves to be whimsical again.
Yeah, and Super Smash Brothers for the Wii U will be the first game to make use of this feature, and you'll buy these figures, which the figures themselves look pretty good. I mean, you know, Mario's got like this translucent plastic fireball trailing from his hand. And all this other shit, and they look like they're very well done. I mean, they're cool.
So you have to buy these figures to use the characters in-game? Is that what I'm getting?
No. No, you can still use the characters in-game, but getting the figures will unlock other special abilities for them.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's not going to be quite like that. And I don't know. I find this to be a very diabolical and evil method of marketing.
Hmm.
Though, I want to be pissed off about this. I really do, because it does irk me. But at the same time, I kind of have to sit back and ask myself, well, how is this different from paying to get DLC?
Yeah.
And I guess one could say the difference is DLC is universally available. I mean, all you got to do is go and buy it and download it. Whereas these are tangible, and you have to, you know, there's going to be a collector's market for these goddamn things probably. And you're going to have to deal with that and actually track it down and finding them.
I don't think it'll be that hard to find them at, like, say, Walmart or EB Games.
Well, honestly. I know a lot of people with – and when he says EB Games, he means GameStop, guys. Canada different. I figured I'd translate that for everybody.
Thank
real quick.
You.
But with Skylanders, a lot of people had problems finding the figures that they want. Well, see, it has been a thing, and I see that duplicating itself.
See, I'm completely ignorant to Skylanders because it's just something, like, I don't get it, and I haven't indulged in it, so I don't know the trials and tribulations of Skylander collecting.
Me neither, but I mean, I've heard people bitch about it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, that's interesting. That is interesting. I'm okay with it so long as the requirements to buy these things are made clear up front. Like, you shouldn't be playing a game that you didn't think needed this function, and then you get to a point where you then need to go out and buy another thing. Like I don't like that, but if the games advertise up front, this uses the Amoeba system, or Amiibos, or whatever, if this uses our little Skylander knockoff thing, then, you know, you know what you're getting into up front. And that, you know, I'm okay with. But if they start sneaking these into other games, that's when it starts to become diabolical.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't see any disingenuousness here on Nintendo's part. I mean, they're pretty good about that. Nintendo, they're good guys for the most part. They do wacky, weird shit, but they're fairly benevolent unless you're trying to post... You know, unless you're trying to do a let's play on fucking YouTube, in which case you're your worst fucking enemy. Stop screwing yourself, Nintendo.
Nintendo doesn't understand what century we're in sometimes.
Yeah.
And they're like they like to push the envelope in a lot of ways, but in terms of how they understand media, they still think it's like 1997.
Yeah. And you know, they're fucking themselves. I mean, mm-hmm. They're hurting word of mouth when they do that. Hopefully they're going to soften that stance a bit, but you know, we'll see. But yeah, most of the games shown at E3 by Nintendo showed gameplay footage. The Zelda game, not Hyrule Warriors, the actual new installment in the Zelda series by Nintendo, that was pre-rendered, but it was beautiful and it was awesome and it was Zelda and no one cared. It was really the only one that they did like that. Bayonetta, when they showed Bayonetta 2, it was kind of, it looks like it's a combination, or maybe the in-game engine's just that great. But that looks pretty good, and Bayonetta 2 is going to come with Bayonetta 1 remastered for the Wii U, so that way, you know, those like myself who had never heard of or played the first one will get a chance to play that as well. And I'm looking forward to that, and I definitely plan on getting it. What else? New Kirby game, which I've always been kind of lukewarm on Kirby, but it looked interesting enough.
Mm-hmm.
A new Yoshi game done completely in yarn texture, where everything is made out of yarn.
Why?
Because why not, I guess. It looks very interesting. If you like that aesthetic, if you find the aesthetic to be interesting, you'll like the game.
I am neither a cat nor an 80-year-old woman, so yarn does nothing for me.
Lol. Well, maybe Rami can get some enjoyment out of it. I don't know. I'm not going to say I'd buy it, but I'll look into it when it comes out, and I'll find out a bit more about it. Because it almost – I'd rather they would have gone with something like clay
mm-hmm.
or something like that, kind of get like a claymation look to it. I think that would have been really cool. But, you know, it does have a little bit of that kind of feel to it still, even with yarn.
Mm.
So I might look into it. But yeah, nothing on the Metroid front, though they do have a Samus figure, which will be part of the Amiibos. Of course, that could just be used for Smash Brothers.
It probably will.
Yeah, but I'm hoping that will be, you know, something that...
I don't want Nintendo to touch Metroid until they learn what they did wrong from the last go-around.
The baby!
Metroid Other M.
Yes.
The baby. Where they turn what had been considered one of the strongest female protagonists in video games into a dependent, whiny woman.
With daddy issues.
With daddy issues, yes. So, you know, it's kind of like Nintendo was like, we have this great female character. Let's ruin her.
We will do this.
So, but, you know, Nintendo, I'm a fan of the Metroid series, so Nintendo, don't do Metroid until you realize what you done wrong.
I think they do. Now my fear is with Star Fox that they're gonna have like on the ground missions.
No. They learned their lesson with that, from the GameCube Star Fox game. I forget the title of that, but that was ass. That was the next Star Fox game after Star Fox 64, and I was excited to play that thing. And then after, like, one mission, you're on the ground solving, like, puzzles in a jungle, and you're like, what the fuck is... the hell is this? This is not Star Fox!
Hey, at least you can figure out how to play it.
Yeah, the first Star Fox for the DS... all of the controls were used by you using the touchscreen, and so you had to touch... you had to use the touchscreen exactly right to fire, to steer, to use the bomb option... And, that game was literally unplayable.
Yeah. So, you know, I don't think we'll be seeing that again. Hopefully, Nintendo does seem to be one that learns from their mistakes.
They do, but the problem with Nintendo, my biggest problem with Nintendo, and this goes back to, the launch of the DS, and it kind of continued into the Wii, is that since Nintendo's kind of been on this current, track they've been going on, every time they get a new toy, every time they develop a new feature, they tend to go overboard with it. And the first few games that use it really overutilize the new feature to the point that it becomes either annoying or unplayable. And then future games, they scale it back and they realize how to use this new technology properly. But the first go-around's always rough.
Yeah. And, well, the thing is with Nintendo, they normally don't make the same mistake twice. Mm-hmm. They just go on to make brand new ones.
Yes. Yes, yes.
But I came away from the Nintendo presentation very, very impressed, very excited for a lot of what they've got coming. Mm-hmm. Nintendo, even in like the way they did the presentation, they even had like little robot chicken type sequences here and there that were actually funny and kind of poked fun at things, like the scene of Bowser and Peach standing there, like supposed to be backstage, and Bowser's like, "Yeah, Peach, I just want to say I'm sorry for, like, you know, kidnapping you 80 million times." And she's just quiet. He's like, "So, can I have that last donut?" And she just grabs it, puts it in her mouth, and walks away. And at the beginning of it, they had like this robot chicken style intermission or interlude or whatever, where Reggie, whatever the fuck his name is, the My Body Is Ready guy, saying, you know, blah 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 blah, and someone in the audience says, "What? No new Mario game?" And then Reggie just shoots a fireball at him, and the kid incinerates. So it shows that Nintendo is kind of learning to laugh at themselves a little bit and show us that they already know how to maybe do, you know, internally, but just have this thing about how to present themselves in public. And they're showing a little bit more of an irreverent edge to their humor somewhat. And I like that, you know, it makes it more relatable. It worked for the presentation, unlike the really shitty jokes that the Sony guy made and so on and so forth.
I didn't see the Microsoft presentation. Did they still have that same smug asshole from last year?
You know, I wouldn't probably even know that guy if I seen him. I'm pretty sure he got his ass fired, though. I think he actually did, or he resigned, which means he was probably given the option to resign or be fired.
Yeah, a lot of people.
Because he was a fucking cock nugget, man. That dude was a douche canoe of the highest caliber.
Yeah, he was a douche canoe, and he's like, and it was hilarious last year when they're rolling out the Xbox One, and he's like, "It's only like the most awesome thing ever created," and then like people are booing their presentation, or as people are like cheering at Sony's. Sony's like, "You don't have to pay extra to share a game. Thank you."
Yeah, here's how you share a game on PS4. Hey, Bob, here's that game you wanted to borrow. Thanks, Tim.
Exactly, yeah. But, you know, that's E3, I guess. Was there anything outside of the big three companies that caught your eye?
Something that kind of upset me, made me a sad panda. Monster Hunter 4U, 4 Ultimate, not coming out for Wii U.
Oh.
Only on 3DS. God damn it, Capcom. First, you take away my Mega Man, and now you're doing this. Fuck you, Capcom. Well, now, the new Strider is awesome, but fuck you, Capcom.
I'm not even sure Capcom really knows what, like, they're doing as a company anymore.
Because now I'm going to have to buy a 3DS.
It's a good system.
Oh, I know. And it's got a lot of other games I want on it. I'm not getting it just for this game. This is just, like, the straw that's breaking the camel's back and the tipping point. Okay, I'll buy your fucking system. And, yeah, I've been toying around with the idea the entire time. And I'll just pray someone comes out with some kind of adapter where I can play it on a big screen.
Well, the good news about it is that they've released the 3DS XL, so you should be good on that front. It's got the screen's 90% bigger than the standard 3DS.
It's modeled after my cock.
Sure. And another good thing about the 3DS is that if the 3D bothers your eyes, like I know it does a lot of people, you do have the option to just turn the 3D off. Like, you can just choose to not use the 3D if you want.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's nice to have options. But, you know, that's our E3 coverage, and I think that will do it for this week's episode of Basically a Geek Show, episode 19. You can catch us on, Spreaker, not Podomatic anymore, Spreaker, YouTube, iTunes. You can catch us on Twitter @ageekshow, email us at basicallyageekshow@gmail.com, and stay tuned, for next week when on Basically a Sports Show, myself, Zach, and Greg will talk a little bit about the World Cup, we'll talk a little bit about the NBA Finals, and we'll go over the Los Angeles Kings winning their second Stanley Cup in 3 years. So that has been this week on Basically a Geek Show. For Jack, I am Mike, signing off.
Good night, everybody.
Try again.